The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Some years ago I heard, I guess it's kind of a little Christian story of a person who prays to God and says, "Dear God, thank you. Thank you for this day and that I have so far not harmed anyone and been angry and greedy, and it's great. But I'm about to get up this morning out of bed." And I don't know how it goes on from there, but the way the poem is, this story is set up, you know, you don't realize the person's just woken up, and it sounds like, you know, the person's had a full day maybe, and but then now it's going to get out of bed, and now, you know, now it gets challenging. So for people who meditate every morning, it can be similar, you know, just meditate and perhaps touch into a level of goodness, inner goodness, or calm, or feeling like, now I feel in touch with myself in some good way, and the intention would be, I'm going to be this way now the rest of the day. I'm going to be calm, I'm going to be centered, connected to my goodness. I'm going to be non-reactive, not a single irritated, angry, cynical word's going to come out of my mouth all day. And that's the aspiration. And you make it to the first email, or the first something, you know, it doesn't last long. It's, something happens, and then it gets challenging. And it happens on retreats as well, that people who go on meditation retreats will be very inspired sometimes by somehow the connection they have to themselves, to their goodness, to their being peaceful, or to their integrity, or to feeling connected to what really feels true. And it becomes a great aspiration, and sometimes even an expectation. I got it made now. I'll never be angry ever again, because I haven't been on retreat, and I feel so, this is so strong. This is like, wow, is this strong? And 2 hours later, you're having a fight with a friend, you know, argument, and it didn't last long. So this idea that we can have, be connected to something that's very valuable and important, some sense of way of being, some connection to truth, to love, to something, and really feel this is how I want to live my life. But then as life unfolds, it can be all too easy to lose touch with it and get swept up by the conditions and causes of what's going on. Is a pretty common phenomenon. In meditation practice, the same thing can happen. But to give it like a little example, it might be that a person is always restless, always fidgeting. And they know that this is the case, but they can't figure out how to stop it. But then when they sit down to meditate, there's kind of a commitment there in meditation during that period of time not to move, to be still. And the urge to fidget might still arise, but at least for that period you're committed to not move, or you're afraid that the people around you will judge you if you do. And so you hold still, and as you do that, because of that commitment, you start seeing the desire, the impulse to fidget more clearly than you ever saw before. And you start seeing that every time there's an urge to fidget, what preceded it was fear about something. There's fear. And then you realize, wait a minute, I thought I was just a fidgeting person. The real issue is there's fear. And so maybe this thing, what I did with the fidgeting, not giving into it, but really staying committed to being still, that revealed so much that was so important. I got to see this fear I have. Maybe I'll do the same thing with the fear. Let me not kind of give in to the fear. Let me stay still, either literally or metaphorically, in the middle of all the fears that arise. Let me see what happens then. Let me not get carried away by the stories and the emotions, and let me not identify with it. Let me just kind of stay present and mindful. And maybe by doing that, something greater clarity around the fear arises. Maybe it gets clear that, yes, now that I know how to stay still and with the fear, I see how strongly I identify with the fear. I define myself by the fear. I'm a fearful person. I'm a bad person because I'm afraid. And this says something about me, and I really feel discouraged, and I've become critical of myself. Wow, I didn't know it was so complicated, this fidgeting. There's a lot going on here. So I just made up that example, but to emphasize this thing about the commitment to stay still or stay present, not give in to something, it can really reveal. So to bring these two things together that I've talked about, that on one hand we can be in touch with something that's really good in practice, and we really feel this is how I want to live my life. It's not uncommon for people to practice for some time, maybe some years or something, and maybe been doing it seriously on retreat or something. At some point, it becomes clear to them that they want to do, there's something about what happens to them when they practice, some connection to truth, to peace, to love, to something that becomes a dharma, that becomes, they want that to be the center of their life. This is the most important thing. And then they make that commitment, and next thing they knew, they've lost it because they had a family crisis or something, whatever happened. And then we have these things we know about ourselves that are quite challenging, and we've learned that by sometimes it's good to kind of have a commitment not to give into it, hang in there, and so in order to clarify what's really going on and find a way to the other side. So these two examples I want to use to come where the meeting point in, is a whole kind of Buddhist practice that we don't emphasize very much in our insight meditation movement, but it's a big part of Buddhism, in both Theravada Buddhism and Mahayana Buddhism, and that is having a vow, V-O-W. So it's not just simply having a commitment to something or intention to something, but it's a higher level of, you know, dedication. It's not just simply an aspiration, but when you make a vow, it's kind of like making a promise. But its promise is maybe kind of secular, but vow kind of has, for some people, a little bit more of a religious or spiritual connotations. I make a vow. This is my vow. And vow doesn't have to come with, obligation. It doesn't have to come with some heavy feeling of religious sin or something if you don't live up to the vow. But there's a way in which we practice around a clearly stated vow. This is what I'm dedicating my life to. This is what's important for me. And so when we forget, when we're about to forget or something happens and we get all frazzled and upset, and then we go, oh, but I have this vow. I made this promise to myself. So it happened in a small way with me last week when I had a difficult day. And I kind of have a dedication, a vow, trust in being mindful and practicing. So I said, Gil, this seems impossible. But I have a vow to practice. It might not work. Doesn't matter, this is my vow. And sure enough, when I stayed practice in mindfulness, there was a way, it found a way. Or a vow to be compassionate. A central part of my life was still, when I was ordained as a Zen priest many years ago, was a vow to be of compassionate service to others, for the welfare of others. And that's kind of remains an organizing principle for my life. And sometimes when I don't know what to do, or sometimes I have other ideas of what I should do, or I'm tired that day, I remember I have this vow. And so the vow is the center of life, or the vow is the orientation, or this is where I live my life, based on this vow. And in the Zen tradition, sometimes they kind of will talk about, they talk a lot about emptiness. And at least in the Zen tradition I studied with, they would love to say things like, there's no purpose. There's no purpose. Nothing has any purpose. But we can have a vow. So even though there's no purpose to the vow, you're supposed to have a vow. Or if everything's empty, if there's no self, in a sense, yes, maybe there's no self, but I have this, but there's this vow that's operating here. And so this is my commitment. This, no matter what, this is what I'm going to do. Now, how that vow can arise out of some real deep place that's really appropriate, really right for you, is one of the interesting questions. And for me, when I started encountering this idea of a vow in Buddhism, was with what was called the Bodhisattva vow in Zen. What really clicked for me was that it was not like I had to it wasn't like those were good vows out there that I had to take into myself, but rather there was some way that the inner life wanted to respond to the world that those vows mirrored. And so I took those vows not because they were something external, because they gave voice to something I discovered inside already. And so at some point as we practice, in small ways and big ways, we start discovering that it's valuable. We start discovering that we're not infallible. We can easily lose touch with what is our deepest intention or greatest values or what we're trying to do here. And it might serve you to have a vow. As opposed to this vague idea, you know, yeah, mindfulness is good, I should be mindful. Yeah, this is a challenging situation, and yeah, I should be mindful, but, you know, I'm kind of lazy today, or no one around me cares about mindfulness. In fact, they kind of disrespect it, so I'm not going to do it today. You know, but if you have a vow to practice, then you have a whole different orientation. That this is like, you know, it's like maybe like a marriage vow. You know, wake up one day and that vow was good for yesterday, but today's not a good day for my marriage vows. I'll pick it up again tomorrow. But there's all these beautiful people out there for today, and you know? I'll take a break from my vows and pick it up again tomorrow. And okay. There might be, you know, who knows? But you know, so then but rather if you stay with a vow, then it becomes like a mirror. It forces us to look at ourselves more deeply and question ourselves and what's driving us and what's motivating us not to live by the vow. And to really calls on us to really investigate and look and deepen. So whether it's a vow to stay connected or practice with what's the best in us, or a vow to not give in to what's worst in us, it can kind of come together, maybe, in a single vow. And what would that vow be for you? What would you kind of feel like, this is what I want to do, how I want to live my life, this has value, this has greater value than looking at one more website, or eating one more donut, or complaining one more time about something which I'm not going to have any influence in the world whatsoever, and I keep complaining over and over again about this thing. Is there something that's much better for you to be committed to? And would it make sense to actually make a vow, to articulate that for yourself? This, I vow. So, this is a long-standing Buddhist tradition to have vows. And it's a whole practice in itself. So it has, you know, all these different dimensions. This person lives by it and goes by it. So it doesn't have to be as big as I'm talking about. It can be very simple. But, you know, for this year, I'm going to vow to meditate every day. And then, even if your house burns down that day, before you go to sleep, you'll sit you meditate. But you don't meditate while the house is burning down. That would be a silly vow. But no matter how difficult it is, I have this vow. This year I'm supposed to do this. So think about it. See if it has any, what I'm talking about has any value for you, or if it doesn't today, maybe someday the idea of living a life based on vow will be interesting for you. Thank you.